We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Rippy Writes with Brian Scott Libby.
Transcripts can be obtained by drinking a fifth of bourbon, ramming your head through some drywall, and then writing down every thought you have.
What is up? I am Brian Scott Rippey. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of the Rippey Writes podcast. It is our Sunday SEC baseball conversation with Colin Brister. We talked about Ole Miss's sweep over Morehead State. What to make of this team now that it's the bulk of its non-conference season, aside from midweeks, is complete. Expectations heading into conference play, starting pitching, and a whole lot more. Buckle up. I think you'll enjoy this podcast. Before we get to that, though, I want to take one quick break to remind you. This podcast is brought to you by C Spire. It's time to upgrade your home internet to the best service in the market with C Spire Home Fiber. The past few years have proven how important it is to have a reliable home internet connection for you and your family. That's why C Spire Home provides the most reliable internet service with 99.99% uptime. C Spire also prides themselves in having the best customer service in the home internet market. Their customer service is award-winning, local service based out of the Southeast with industry-low call wait time. C Spire provides 1 gigabit and 300 megabit internet packages to homes across Mississippi, Birmingham, and the Southern Alabama regions. C Spire is also proud to announce the release of their brand new 2 gigabit and 8 gigabit home internet plans. Save yourself the hassle by not waiting for your internet connection to drop with the other guys. Call or go online to cspire.com/home today to use the promo code RIPPEE, R-I-P-P-E-E, at checkout for 1 month of free service. That's right. Just for listening to this podcast, you get 1 month of free service when signing up for C Spire. Check them out. C Spire, customer inspired. This podcast is brought to you by Skybox Sports Picks. Who is Skybox Sports Picks? Well, glad you asked. They're the world's best gambling handicapping website, the inventors of the Skybox Matrix Interval, an advanced modeling mechanism that has helped propel Skybox to the top of the sports handicapping industry. March Madness is here. Do not miss out this March Madness. Don't lose money. Go with Skybox. They will guide you to profit. They absolutely destroy it in college basketball every single year and have done so this year as well. Just ask their clients. Don't miss out this March Madness. Buy the Skybox March Madness picks package and cruise your way to profit through March and April. It's the best time of the year. All kinds of games on over the next couple of weeks. Don't lose money on it. Go with the professionals. They'll send you a picks package, color-coded spreadsheet daily, categorized by unit, and boom, you'll be more equipped to profit than you ever were going off your own knowledge. Check them out, skyboxsportspicks.com. Go online, find a picks package in your price range, whatever you want to try. Use the promo code RIPPEE, R-I-P-P-E-E, and that'll get you 20% off any purchase. Thank me later, cash out later. Check them out, skyboxsportspicks.com. Okay, here's Colin. All right, we now welcome on Rippy Wright's baseball correspondent, Colin Brister. Another weekend, another sweep for Ole Miss as they take care of a not-so-great Morehead State team in the final weekend of non-conference play. I was traveling for another wedding this weekend in New Orleans, but actually had the time to go back and watch Game 1 and Game 2 this afternoon once I did get back today. So I actually feel pretty locked in as opposed to like watching it at a bar in New Orleans like I would have on my phone. But another good weekend. You can only beat the opponents in front of you. They look better offensively. Yeah. The bullpen's been great. We'll obviously dive into the starting pitching aspect of it. But I don't think I learned a ton about this weekend other than maybe the Liam Doyle thing. But I think this team, as you look at this now, and they've won however many out of however many since that Hawaii series, they're okay. They'll hit. They'll be okay. Some moving parts. But they sound the alarms after the Hawaii in the midweek. I think you can put that to rest. They're okay.
Yeah. You know, three complete games, first sweep of the year. Obviously, you kind of wish your first sweep of the year wasn't in, what, week four.
They did take three from High Point, didn't they?
No, they lost on Friday.
thought that was Iowa. Oh, no, you're right. My brain is not here today. Sorry, go ahead.
Look, they're playing better. Obviously, you were concerned with the four-game losing streak early in the year. But it is kind of funny. Somebody mentioned to me today, how different is this whole thing if they just win one more game at Hawaii? You know, you win 3 out of 4 at Hawaii, you drop a midweek to Arkansas State, who cares? And then if you lose a Friday to High Point, then, well, okay, that kind of sucks. But, you know what I mean? Like, they're one game away, I feel like, from everybody being kind of, you know, somewhat positive on this team. I think, like you said, they're okay. I don't think this team's hosting a regional. I don't think this team's going 5-25. It's somewhere in the middle. And if you're an Ole Miss fan, hopefully it's on the side of the middle that gets you into the NCAA tournament and gives you a puncher's chance like you had in 2022 where magic happened. But, yeah, look, you're starting to learn more about roles and what Mike thinks about people. And we'll see. I don't see this team hosting a regional, but again, like you said, I don't see this team going 6-24 like last year either. I think it's definitely somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, like we were talking right before we just cut on hit the record button. Like, I think the way I would describe it so far is like, I'll raise the floor to, they're probably, in all likelihood, as I say this, I might mush them, but like not going the 5-25 or whatever the hell it was last year. I'll raise it to like, you know, this team really does bottom out. I think it's in that 10-20 mark, and maybe they just can't get the link from starting pitching and the offense isn't good enough to overcome it. But given the way they've looked generally over the last 3 weekends, I think I'm to the point where I'm willing to raise my floor, just because I think the offense, again, we'll see what happens when they get to conference play, is legitimate enough. I think the bullpen's really good. I mean, hell, Chase had a note in one of his stories after the Saturday game. I think the bullpen had gone 22 1/3 innings without allowing an earned run. Naturally, after that, you reach that remarkable feat. They struggle a little bit in the finale, but be that as it may, like two of the four main facets really surrounding like a college baseball team, I feel okay about them in. And I think there's a chance could be better defensively. They definitely should be better defensively. And two, can end up figuring out the starting pitching to be competent. So like, that's kind of what leads me to say, I think their floor for me is a little bit raised, because again, after those first 5 games, you hit that 4-game losing streak. There was a part of me, it was like, could this be, I remember sitting there Friday night at that High Point game, which is crazy because I'm at the game they lost, and 3 weeks later, I can't remember that it wasn't a sweep. But I was sitting there thinking as they lost that game, I was like, man, could this team be all-time bad? And I started going through like the schedule, and I was like, I don't think I can still get to like 3-27 or anything crazy. But anyway, point being, I'm off that ship. I thought they looked better this weekend. Starting pitching-wise, where do you kind of land? I've watched Dennis start, watched Doyle start. I want to get to Doyle in a second, but Dennis was – okay, he's kind of unconventional from Ole Miss from like a Friday night pitcher standpoint, to where he's a lefty with that kind of a big sweeping breaking ball instead of that harder, sharp slider. He leaves it up a lot. I know it was wet and raining on Friday night, but there were a couple pitches where it all looked like Rick the Wild Thing Vaughn, where it was like, did that stay in the netting?
And now, we're talking about Dennis.
I may have crossed my wires there, but on Friday night, he was okay. He slipped out of a couple jams, didn't get any help from his defense early on, but he throws a lot of pitches, and it seems like, and I know Morehead State's been pretty good about walking and seeing a lot of pitches from their numbers, but he's missing that swing and miss element to him to kind of, one, preserve pitch count, but also get out of at bats and not let that thing go 8-9 pitches. That was my main like frustration watching it.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I talked to somebody this weekend that was at all 3 games. He was like, man, you know what we got on the mound for a starting rotation right now? I'm like, what's that? He's like, we've got 3 pretty solid Saturday pitchers. He's like, we got a pretty solid Saturday pitcher on Friday, solid Saturday pitcher on Saturday, and a solid Saturday pitcher on Sunday. So the key with that is, what can you do on Friday night with a solid Saturday pitcher in the SEC? And we're going to find out, man, if they can just go 4-6, 5-5, keep this thing on the road on Friday nights in the SEC, they're going to be all right. Because I think you're going to win some games on Saturday and Sunday with that type of with those types of guys, especially with the bullpen is pitching as well as it has, you know, today excluded, obviously. But I kind of think that's just what they are. I don't think you're going to have the dominant Friday night guy. Look, this program has won games without the dominant Friday night guy before, and it's made runs. And you know, I watched this team, and no offense to Brady Bramlett, who was a pretty good pitcher, but I don't think anybody saw him and was like, dominant Friday night SEC arm. Well, he was a Friday night SEC arm on a team that hosted a regional. And should have been a national seed in 2016. You look at Will Etheridge in 2019. I don't know if anybody said dominant Friday night arm. He was good, but you don't have to be overly great on Friday nights to win. You've just got to keep it in the tracks. And Ole Miss couldn't do that last year. And the hope is this year that somebody like a Gunnar Dennis or a Liam Doyle, I'm not sure I'd go Grayson Sanya there yet. On Friday nights, I think where he's at is perfect for him right now. But if you can just get somebody to keep it in the road on Friday nights, man, you got a chance to be okay.
Yeah, and I know last week we talked about after they struggled a little bit on Friday night again, like if you don't have a dude, you don't really have a chance. But it's not really talking – like it sounds like in some degree we're talking out of both sides of our mouth, but that's not really the case. You just have to – like a guy to keep it within the lines on Saturday is still a very good upper echelon starting pitcher in the SEC. Like you just have to guy that honestly throws enough strikes and misses enough bats to give you a chance. What you can't have a dude is go – make, you know, self-inflicted mistakes, walk the ballpark, not be able to put the hitter away, let counts grow, which is kind of what my frustration with Dennis was, as I mentioned earlier. Like, that's not really the profile. I think out of these three guys you currently have, and last week we talked about the Mallett's option or potentially one or two others, is at this point, like, finding the guy with the highest ceiling. We'll get to the Doyle aspect in a second, but that guy went – you know, he allowed back-to-back singles in, I think, either the second or third inning and then blew three straight fastballs by guys for strike three. I think all six of his first outs were strikeouts, that type of stuff. Honestly, he just kind of had the energy and looked like a SEC weekend type guy. Again, not a perfect outing by any stretch, but I just mentioned him to point out, like, out of all these guys that they have, you mentioned the note about just having three pretty good Saturday guys, throw in another candidate or two. Who has the highest ceiling to kind of go up to a level of a, like, I mean, Dylan DeLuce is a ridiculously high bar, but that type of thing that can actually go miss enough barrels and give you enough length to give you six innings on Friday night in the SEC, even if it's not six innings of shutout baseball?
The answer to that question is somebody that I don't really want to see on Friday nights right now. I think the answer is Grayson Sanya. If from a talent perspective, from a who can be a dominant Friday night SEC arm, I think it's him. But I think he's also had some struggles so early in his career that leaving him on Sunday right now is what's best for that kid. The next best option I would, from the looks of this weekend, again, it's not a great team in Morehead State. Well, let's not kid ourselves. The Dole kid was pretty good. He was, you know, left side electric and get up to 95 with a fastball. He's pitched in big situations at Coastal Carolina. I think he could be an option there. From a ceiling perspective, it feels like it's those two that you start with.
I think so, too. And you mentioned the Doyle aspect from Coastal Carolina. Kid from New Hampshire starts the year out of the bullpen. They have a lot of injuries on their pitching staff. He ends up having to become the Friday night guy by default toward the end of the year and does pretty well. I think he had a handful of starts. He went six innings and won seven innings, another six and a two-thirds and another one. And actually started a winner's bracket game in the Conway Regional last year against Duke. I was like, damn, who does that sound like? Ole Miss had a couple of guys do that back in 2022. So a guy that's been there, done that, at least to a certain degree, at least you know he can start, has had some success doing that, was a Friday night guy, at least for the end of the year on a regional team. And so, you know, that was a very encouraging outing. I'm not ready to go to the point of saying he needs to be the Friday night guy, because I just don't know. I'm having a hard time differentiating really any of these guys. I agree with your note on Sanya, to where that is probably the guy with the highest ceiling that's currently a starter, I would say. But I don't think the best move is to move him there right now. And I can't, after one outing against not a very good Morehead State club, I can't just go and say I think Liam Doyle should be the Friday night guy, because I just don't know how to differentiate him, Dennis, and Sonny right now with their output. It's not always terrible, not always great. It's always just somewhere in the middle. And so I'm curious.
I was going to ask. Do you think the rotation changes next weekend? Because I don't. I think this is the rotation the first weekend of SEC play.
I do too. And that's kind of where I was going to land on Liam Doyle, is like he earned another start and it's probably going to be in game two again. And I don't really know how you would flip flop the other pieces unless Mike really felt bad about Fridays against an SEC team. And, you know,
the only thing that I'm a little antsy about is Mike doesn't like to throw two lefties in a row. I wondered maybe if he would flip it around some way to do that, but I don't actually think he will. I think it's going to stay the same.
I think so too. I mean, the only other thing I could think of is if Mike pushes like the nuclear mallets button, which I don't think either one of us at this point thinks he will do, even though we were kind of leading that way last week. But other than that, yeah, I don't really see a change. I think all three have earned another opportunity to kind of lead the status quo, at least for another week. And I'm curious, against a South Carolina that's going to be a pretty fair test. It's not necessarily an overbearing offense, but it's a team that, like Ole Miss, draws a ton of walks. Like, they're going to make these guys beat them. I don't think they're going to give them a whole lot. And so, in a way, it'll be an extremely fair test for them next weekend, and I'm curious to see how it turns out. Not to jump the shark too far ahead to South Carolina yet, but just this made me think of something. Over under the amount of starts Ole Miss gets where the guy goes five innings or more. I set it at 1.5.
This weekend?
Yeah.
Five innings.
Five complete.
One. I think one is my number.
I think I lean under, but if they get two, I like their chances of winning the series, which I know in some ways is obvious. But if they get two, given what their bullpen's been, I actually really like their chances.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny. There was such a big deal about starters not being able to give you length last year. And that's certainly the case. But the reason that was such a big deal was because the bullpen sucked. And I know that's like a no-duh statement. But, like, this year, it's, hey, if you can just get five, the bullpen's pretty good. And if you can't get five, if you can just give us four, bullpen's pretty good. Last year, you were getting five, and also the guys that you put in weren't very good. So it was a little bit of an issue.
And in fairness to last year's bullpen, like it became what it became because they already weren't a deep pitching staff, and then you have the injuries and key pieces in the bullpen had to assume starting roles. Like it was a double-edged sword in that sense of it. So yeah, I agree. That's another thing where when you talk about not having a guy on Fridays in the SEC and that being tough, that's probably where it's not that cut and dry, particularly with this team, as you kind of flesh this thing out 4 weeks into the season. Now, their bullpen is strong enough to where, you know, if you get five or six innings of, you know, 1-2-run ball on Friday and you're in the game entering the seventh inning, you feel pretty good about Ole Miss's chances. Whereas last year, in some small spots, they actually got that from the starter, but by that point, they just didn't have guys that could finish the game and get the last 9 to 12 outs. I mean, that Florida series, the second or third weekend of the S-Conference play last year, really stuck out because they were in that game too. They had a lead going in the sixth or seventh inning. I can't remember if it was a 1 or 2 run lead, but I was at that game and I remember sitting there watching it. I'm thinking I don't feel good at all. Actually, I feel horrible about their chances to collect these last 9 outs. And everything was going pretty well for them at that point. Whereas on Friday night against South Carolina, if they're up 4-2, you know, entering the sixth inning and you pull Dennis, I actually feel fairly great about their chances of salting that one away, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. You know, and the interesting thing about, because I think, you know, Mike is somewhat, I don't know if hesitant's the right word. I don't think he wants to use mallets twice in a weekend. So I'm kind of interested to see how that is used. Hopefully, if you have a lead after 7 innings on Friday night, it's used as you give him the ball and let him finish it, or even really after 6 innings. And some people have said, you know, he didn't have a good day today. I don't care.
I put no stock into that at all. That
dude gets a mulligan. It's fine. He's going to be okay. You know, it's like Taylor Broadway would have a bad game. Like, I'm concerned. I'm like, about what? Why would you be concerned? He's going to be all right.
There was a run with Broadway there where he had a bad outing and people was like, is it cause for concern? I was like, no, that's just proof he's human.
Yeah. I mean, here's another thing. And I tell my kids this all the time. It's like, man, the other team tries too.
They do.
You know, like, they're up there trying. So, you know, no, I'm not concerned about Josh Mallett at all. Please don't be. But yeah, that's going to be the most interesting thing to me from the bullpen perspective is how does he get the most leverage out of you know, one appearance on the weekend from him, and does he start trying to use him twice in the weekend? I think that'll be interesting to see.
I am too. Like, is that a Taylor Broadway where, because again, we're talking about guys and can they get you five innings, and if you're in a tight game with South Carolina on Friday night and, you know, Dennis gets you five, do you just go straight to Mallett's? That's it for the weekend, but please finish this sucker off so we can go into Saturday with a pretty good chance to take the series.
Yeah, and I think I would. And even if he can just get you three and you got to finish it with somebody else, hopefully you're up by enough then that, you know, it doesn't matter. But yeah, I would do, you know, assuming I have a lead and I'm not behind, if I'm tied or have the lead on Friday night, man, I'm trying to win on Friday night. You know, and that sets yourself up where you just got to get one the rest of the weekend to call it a successful weekend. Obviously, a sweep would be preferable, but that's really, really hard to do in SEC play. I'm actually going to get to go to some games this weekend. That's going to be enjoyable. I haven't been to been to games yet, or this year, and I'm excited to get to Swayze. Didn't they do some renovations and stuff since I've been there last?
I lose track of the renovations. Nothing I've noticed. I've been to a couple games this year so far. I actually think I'll get to go to a couple this coming weekend, as the last weekend for the old wedding gets here. I won't actually have anything to do. So I'm looking forward to that. I don't know about renovations wise. I think the batter's eye had already been expanded. That was a couple years ago project. Nothing that I've noticed, but I mean, there could be a new club section out there, and I'd be like, sure, was that not there years ago? And it could be brand new. I'd not be a great gauge of that one. But anyway, I was looking through some of the bullpen numbers. Look, I know the opponents have not been great. I think Iowa's a decent offense with a really bad bullpen.
What are they did this weekend? Let's go check that out. Go ahead.
I'm going to look that up in a second. But 22 1/3, I don't really care what opponent you're playing. If you go 22 1/3 innings without allowing an earned run, that's something like that. That kind of shows the dominance and the depth of this bullpen as well. And one thing I noticed when rewatching the Saturday game was, and I know this is a little bit irrelevant, and they only made it, I think they only had to cover 7 innings because of the run rule, but like guys that really you didn't think would be in the mix, like they threw Cole Tolbert out there, and then a kid I've never heard of, Gale, I don't even know how you say that, they came in and just allowed a hit in a scoreless inning and 2 strikeouts. Like the dudes on the end of this came in and were like as effective as anyone else on the roster. Like you know occasionally you'll throw a guy in there that doesn't get much work and is not really in the mix, maybe not even on the travel roster. It gets a little weird, but those guys came in and were just as effective as anyone. And then Mason Nichols goes 2 innings of hitless baseball with 5 strikeouts. I know that's kind of like, not something to be surprised from Mason Nichols, but that's kind of difficult to do in a 13-1 game when the outcome's decided and being that sharp and really kind of shoving. I was actually pretty impressed by that because it was not exactly a raucous atmosphere and high leverage situation he was walking into.
No, certainly fair. The Iowa Hawkeyes lost a series to Jacksonville State this weekend.
That's Big Ten favorite Iowa Hawkeyes to you.
Yeah, that is true. That is Big Ten favorite. Now, I will tell you, the Iowa Hawkeyes only walked 13 people in 21 innings this weekend. Or well, no, not 21.
That's more than cutting it in half. They were 31 last weekend.
Yeah. So 26 innings. They walked 13 people. It's only 1 every 2 innings. I see somebody got yelled at. Not walking people in Iowa anymore, but also not winning games. So not helping the Rebels RPI. No, but you're right. They're better. They're so much better in the bullpen this year. And that's a testament and a credit to a lot of people. They're deep. They've got a lot of different arms that can do a lot of different things, which is something you need. And they made an emphasis of that in the portal and in recruiting, and they've delivered on that so far. So this weekend, look, I'm really glad they're opening up with South Carolina, who's a good team, not great, but good team, instead of maybe like a Tennessee or a Vanderbilt or somebody like LSU or Arkansas or somebody of that nature. So you kind of see where you stand. Like if South Carolina comes out and dominates you, then I'm probably not going to have a really high hope for the Rebs. But if you go out, win 2 of 3, you probably a pretty decent ball club. So I think this is going to be a really, really good litmus test and tell you exactly where you're at as far as a barometer goes.
I think so too. I think it's from even just from like a content perspective, barometer is actually the perfect way to put it. It's a great opponent to open up with. I wholeheartedly agree there. One of the things I thought about when looking at the bullpen stuff, I was looking into some guys' numbers earlier today. Like, there's still some guys that haven't pitched a whole lot. Like, when they come in the Friday night game, and I'm actually fairly certain. Yeah, they did not have, Morehead State did not have a hit after Dennis left the game because Morell and Tekoyan came in and just shoved. And Tekoyan, I think he's probably just a product of Mike trying to look at some other guys. And, you know, they've run ruled a few teams. There's only a certain amount of innings to disperse before you get to conference play. But a guy that's gone a decent amount of time between outings, he pitches on the February 23rd against High Point, March 2nd against Iowa, and then the Friday night game against Morehead State. He's totaled 4 innings and has allowed 2 base runners and no hits. He's had a walk and a hit by pitch with 7 strikeouts. Like in the amount of time he's had to throw and the small sample size we've been, Sam Tekoyan's been really good for Ole Miss. And I think that probably speaks to the depth of this and how deep they could be as a bullpen than anything, where guys you haven't seen a ton from yet, just from a sheer lack of opportunity, have been really sharp when their name's been called.
Yeah, no, that's certainly fair. This is a kid that they had high hopes for coming in last year, and we noted, I think, either on last week or the week before's podcast, that he hadn't thrown very much. But you could tell. I actually got to watch him pitch. I believe it was Friday night, maybe Friday night. Not totally sure.
Yeah, he was after Morrell.
Yeah, so he comes in. That's right, after Morrell, and finishes the game off. The stuff looks electric. It does. He kind of started off a little shaky with some balls, but comes in, finishes the hitter, and was really good. The slider was really good. It was dominant, against them. So we'll see. Yeah, certainly a guy they had high hopes for last year that didn't have a really good year at all. And is this year not throwing a whole lot, but like you mentioned, when he has had the opportunities, he's looked really good. And his fastball is going to play up because of the height. So yeah, no, certainly a guy that if that's the guy that's at the at the back end of your bullpen, and what I mean by back end is the guys you don't rely on as much, and he's throwing that well, it certainly shows how much depth you have, or how much depth you think you have.
If that's a guy where you're struggling a little bit in a Saturday game of a series, and he's the second guy out of the pen in the fifth inning, then your bullpen's in a pretty damn good spot.
I
You know what I
think
mean?
that's the
Like,
perfect
he's
word.
probably not used on Friday, maybe not even the first guy out of the pen on Saturday. But if Sam Tekoyan's kind of your third, fourth guy out of the bullpen, if you're struggling with length in like game two of a series, that's pretty strong. Not a lot of clubs have that kind of depth.
No, I don't feel like that's the I feel like that would that's a sign of where Ole Miss is from a bullpen perspective. And the hope obviously is that once SEC play starts, that's continues.
And I keep going back to the comment that you mentioned about like having three very good Saturday guys. It made me keep thinking about, and I was looking at some stuff from the fall after you mentioned that I had saved. If you had a healthier Xavier Rivas, would you feel any differently, or would they just have four pretty good Saturday guys? Like, what
No,
would
I
year
think
two
that I'm,
Xavier Rivas change this team's
yeah,
feeling?
I think that's four pretty good Saturday guys. Certainly maybe one of the candidates that we mentioned with Sanye and Doyle to be one of those higher ceiling Friday guys. But if I had to guess, I think it's four solid Saturday guys at that point. But certainly, yeah, Xavier Rivas would help this ball club.
I think so too, and I think he's probably, if healthy, the Friday night starter, just because, and again, he wasn't great in this role last year, but that's pretty tough expectations to throw on a first-year SEC player last year. He probably ends up being the Friday guy if he's even partially what you think he would have been healthy this year, just because he had been there, done that before. And naturally, I think you, I mean, not to, I, like, it sounds like we're like shorting, cutting, selling the guy short. You would have seen a little bit of a jump just naturally year one to year two in the
Sure.
SEC. But he's probably your Friday guy if this team's healthy, and we're debating probably three guys for the last two spots if everything had shaken out similarly.
Yeah, no, that's certainly fair. And the thing is, they would have put him on Friday nights to start the year, and he would have been good, and he never would have come off Friday nights, especially up until this point in the season. So, yeah, no, I think he may have been your best pitcher, but I'm not sure I would be willing to say he's going to be a top of the SEC Friday night guy.
We'll get back to Colin in just one second, but before we do, I want to take one quick break to remind you. Podcast is also brought to you by LB's University Avenue there in Oxford. Go see Greg for a Rip Your Rights subscriber. You get a new free newsletter from me and discounted meats right now. 6 ounce bacon wrap fillets for $20. That's about a $40 valuation you're getting there for $20. Then go find your own favorites. It's the best butcher shop in the world. All kinds of delicious cuts of meat, sausages, seafood. All kinds of awesome cuts of meat. My personal favorite is the tri-tips. Love the bacon wrap fillet as well. Go find your own favorites at a Crown Jewel of Oxford, a staple of Mississippi. Check them out, LB's University Avenue there in Oxford. This podcast is now brought to you by MC Speech Therapy. Has your child been diagnosed with autism spectrum disorder or another developmental disorder? MC Speech Therapy offers private speech therapy from the comfort of your own home. Other centers may leave you as the parent sitting in the waiting room. MC Speech Therapy enables parents to make every moment with their child therapeutic. Using a relationship-based framework, MC Speech Therapy can help your child engage, relate, and communicate. Maryclare Boudreau's doctorate-level expertise and passion in helping children with communication difficulties offers articulation and language therapy, parent training, and is licensed to do virtual therapy across the state of Mississippi. With MC Speech Therapy, you and your family will gain a better understanding of your child while cultivating stronger relationships. For service today, call 903-824-8575 or email her at maryclare@mcspeechtherapy.net. That is Maryclaire at mcspeechtherapy.net.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week: Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, Keto. Also, 60 add-ons help you stay fueled up and feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Get started today. Get after your goals. Everything from pancakes, smoothies, and more. Discover a wide variety of easy options for the entire day, like breakfast, midday bites, and more. No prep, no mess meals. Factor meals are always ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, no cooking, no cleanup needed. Flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule deliveries any single time. They got 2-minute meals when you need to fuel up fast. Restaurant quality meals ready to heat, again, whenever and wherever you are. It's the perfect solution. If you're looking for fast premium options with no cooking required, sign up and save. We've done the math. Factor is less expensive than takeout, and every meal is dietitian approved to be nutritious and delicious. So head to factormeals.com/MPW50. Use code MPW50 to get 50% off. That's code MPW50 at factormeals.com/MPW50. Podcast is brought to you by the Ole Miss Athletics Foundation. Spring sports are underway. Single game tickets for baseball are now on sale. Also, 2024 football season ticket and donation renewal deadline is March 31st. Got a few weeks left on that. So if you want to get your priority points up before seat or parking selections, call the Ole Miss Athletics Foundation, 662-915-7159. For further information, you can also visit givetoathletics.com, and they thank you for supporting Ole Miss student-athletes and say, go Rebels.
Back to Colin. No, I think he would be very much in the middle and probably towards the bottom, but again, in that competitive range that we mentioned earlier. This Ole Miss team hits. They hit pretty well. They walked again a bunch. They dominated Morehead State in the first two games. The Sunday game got a little bit weird. Austin Simmons, after an electric outing on Wednesday against Memphis, comes in afterwards and struggles a little bit. That would be called the Rippy Wrights podcast curse. That's on me. I probably should never have anyone on the podcast again. But they escape with the sweep. Sonia goes 5 innings, 3 hits, shutout baseball, 1 walk. He's just been very effective. 66 pitches, 46 strikes. Again, I think you can see with the way he's pitching, or what we were talking about earlier, he probably does have the highest ceiling of these starters that we're discussing. But unless you really get desperate on Friday and Saturday, a couple weeks into conference play, I'm just probably letting him sit tight exactly where he is. He seems comfortable, and his confidence seems to be growing.
No, that's exactly right. The stuff's good. And you just, man, just don't put any more pressure on the kid than you have to. And he's liable to turn out really good. And if he turns out really good, then, man, you're going to win a lot of Sunday games. So, I just don't mess with the kid. Just let him sit right there and become the really good pitcher that he is. And I think you're going to be a good ball club.
I agree there. And then offensively, there were a couple of moments this weekend. And again, Morehead State, not exactly a pitching staff that I think is going to power the Eagles to Omaha by any stretch. But with the way Ole Miss is settling into this lineup wise, and as hot as Ethan Groff and Leje have been, that 1-5 in Ole Miss's lineup has become a real SOB to try to get through. And I do actually –
pretty salty.
I think that's going to hold up in SEC play. We've seen teams in the past, mainly younger Mike Bianco teams, where they've really hit a non-conference play and then you get to SEC play and it just doesn't translate. I don't think that's the case, mostly because of the guys that they have there. But, I mean, matchup dependent – or actually these first four are not really matchup dependent at all in terms of lefty-righty, but Groff, Fisher, Ross, Leje is – pretty pretty stout four to start with. And if you can get Treyson Hughes and or Luke Hill going at all, that's a pretty damn complete lineup, because Campbell Smithwick seems to be coming around a little bit, hitting a little bit better.
Yeah.
Really, either of the catchers has been a pretty good spot at the bottom of the order. And whether it's Furness or Udermark, I think you feel pretty solid about. If you can get Hughes or Hill going in any capacity, again, that's a pretty damn good top half of the lineup.
Yeah, no, the first five has been established. Ethan Legere with a huge weekend. Groff having the year that you kind of expected him to have, second year in the program and in the SEC coming up. The first five is really good, and that's what you need. You need your first five to be able to scare people, and they certainly do. And then, like you mentioned, you got guys like Furness, Udermark, Hill. Smithwick's getting a lot better. Birch has swung it well at times, and the first five, man, you need them to go win you games. It's always kind of how I put it. The first five, you need to go win you games. And the last four, you need to not lose you games, if that makes sense. Like, don't be so bad that you're uncompetitive. But the first five are, think about the 2022 national title team. The bottom four of the lineup, they didn't lose you games because they were solid. The first five won you games. That's kind of the – where I've kind of always been from a lineup, especially in college baseball.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, that was really kind of the contrast with that 2022 team, right? Because the bottom five, Schott and Yane and a couple others, they actually were losing them games for a while until they weren't.
Yeah.
They became a much more complete lineup the last 2 months of the season, and that really made the difference. I think that's a pretty perfect analogy in a lot of senses. And I'm curious to see how that ends up fleshing itself out. I hate to start off with, like, the negative piece of it. There's moments where I can kind of see it with Treyson Hughes. He's clearly pressing. He doesn't get cheated on a swing, regardless of whether if he's hitting well or slumping. If you made me pick one of the two that I think ends up coming around, I think I'm going with him. I'm just not totally sure I see it with Luke Hill at this point. I would love to be proven wrong, but I don't know what, even if that becomes a ongoing issue, is there much you can do there? Because we talked about the fact that they don't really have much of another choice.
He's good at short too now. He's good at shortstop. No, you just put him at the nine hole and eat it, and hopefully he can move some runners and, maybe bunt, as much as that pains me to say. I don't know. I haven't seen enough offensively to say, oh, that kid can't hit in the SEC or whatever. But no, there's not much other options. He's going to have to play shortstop for the Ole Miss Rebels.
Yeah, I think that's the case too. And then he has a throwing error on Friday night that allows a run to come across that doesn't really help Dennis. And you're like, man, if you're not hitting, really is tough. But I mean, he's played a pretty decent short outside of that. You just love to see the bat come around a little bit. But man, those other guys, you talk about the portal pickups, and I keep revisiting that every week of like, okay, how did they reshape this roster and how effective is that? With Fisher and Ross, that's as A-plus as A-plus gets. Those guys are machines. And then with Leger and Groff hitting as well as they are at the top of the order, I know I'm kind of repeating myself here, but from a complimentary standpoint of the guys you knew you had coming back, and then you add Fisher and Ross, so far they get an A in my book in terms of reshaping the top half of the lineup, because those guys look legit.
No, certainly. They did a really good job recruiting, and they've hit a lot of guys. You'll certainly take, from an offensive standpoint, the first five guys that have hit for the Rebels and what they've done. You know, it's kind of unfortunate, and that you can't blame anybody, because nobody would ever have probably projected this. But Ole Miss is, after they lose Pratt and, they take Hill, then I guess the next option at shortstop is having them a really good year. TJ McCants hitting 370 with six bombs.
It's not even a hindsight thing. I think everyone in terms of
nobody's mad at that. No.
No, I mean he sounded like someone that really needed a fresh start and a change of scenery.
Yes. So
just because it's happening, and I know you're not insinuating this, but like it's one of those
things, and I'm certainly
it's happening
happy
in Alabama.
Him.
Like, does not necessarily mean that they were dumb for letting him walk.
No,
but yeah, you do look at that sometimes. You're like, oh, that kind of would have been nice.
Does that happen at Ole Miss? I don't know. I do know I'm happy for TJ McCants though.
Me too. I'm happy he's doing well, and I'm happy he's thriving. Seems like a good dude. Obviously, overcome a lot.
So. 806 slugging. He's got a 1266 OPS. Dear God.
That seems pretty good. That'll work.
God. Seven doubles, a triple, and six home runs. That will play, my friend.
Yeah, that could play in Ole Miss's shortstop slot. Kind of like that could probably play in most shortstop slots across the country. That's probably the best way to describe what we were talking about with the top four in the Ole Miss lineup. You got Ethan Leger, 1257 OPS, Jackson Ross, 1306, Andrew Fisher, 1184, and then even Will Furness at 1047. That will play.
Yeah, no, certainly. You know, they've got guys that can swing it, man. They're going to be okay offensively. I know they weren't what we expected last year offensively. Mike Clement's really good at his job. I expect that they're going to be a solid offense in SEC play. I don't think when we look at this into this year, if this team doesn't make the tournament, and I think if I had to guess today, I think they may. I don't think the offense is going to be the reason. It's going to be because we think this bullpen that we think is pretty good doesn't get it done. I'm pretty confident this offense is going to be okay in SEC play.
I am as well. They played four games this week, and Ethan Leger had 10 hits.
That's pretty good.
I think that will play. I think he was put out a total of like five times. That helps. That'll work.
Yeah.
I think you would take that 10 times out of 10. But yeah, this lineup's going to hit. I am curious to see kind of how the bottom half fares in SEC play as they get a couple weekends in. But I think they got options. I think they can be pretty deep and pretty versatile. It looks like, at least for the time being, we are going to have like a true lefty-righty matchup catcher platoon. Do you recall the last time we've had a real catcher platoon? I really don't.
Yes. Okay, so it was a little bit weird. And I'll go back to explain it. It's 2009. That was 15 years ago. I was 15 years old. Go Rebels. It was Brett Basham and it was Kyle Henson. And Brett, so now here's the thing. They were both right-handed. Okay. But when I believe I'm stating this correctly, when a left-hander would pitch, Basham would catch and Henson would DH. When a right-hander would pitch, Henson would catch, and I believe Matt Snyder would DH. So it was not a left right platoon. More so, it was a platoon with Matt Snyder and Brett Basham. If that makes sense,
it does. My brain could not have gone back that far. I was trying to think of one. I started racking my brain for a second. I kind of went to Cooper Johnson and Nick Fortes, but that wasn't really a platoon. That was Cooper Johnson struggling to hit
the baseball. They got sick of Cooper Johnson was what that was.
Yes, exactly. And he ended up having a fine career, but that first year they just started Fortes because they really – the first base option wasn't open, and they were just like, we're just going to roll with him at catcher. But really been a while, and that speaks to Mike just having a dude. And really, it's not even a lack of production for either one of these guys. It's just you've gone into every year accustomed to this guy's going to be the catcher, and it looks like they have two young catchers that can really help them this year. So I don't know, just an interesting wrinkle that you don't really see for Mike Bianco teams very often. You got two lefties back to back, at least right now in the starting rotation. This is going to be an interesting Mike Bianco team. They're really kind of bucking the trend of some Bianco teams. They're walking a ton, which Ole Miss has always been a pretty good discipline team at the plate, but not one you would I can't think of a ton of teams where I necessarily associated with them. Hey, they walk a ton. But that's happening this year. It's really in some ways shaping up to be a bit of an atypical Mike Bianco team. So again, I'm now in the camp of I'm interested. I'd like to see how the first week of conference play goes, but they have my attention rather than my pessimism is the way I'll put it.
Yeah, I'm a lot more interested than I was the weekend after High Point, so 2 weeks ago. No, I think this team can be a bubble team and make the NCAA tournament at the beginning of the year. That's all I wanted. I didn't think this was a team that could host a regional. I still really don't think they can host a regional. Make the NCAA tournament. This program needs to make NCAA tournament. That's why, you know, missing two in a row, I don't think would be acceptable. You know, everybody has last year. Arkansas has the last year. You know, everybody has that year. I just think, you know, everybody can forgive one. Man, you start having two and three of those, and I don't really know how that looks on your program.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think this, again, as we talked about, I think that team's kind of right in that mix. So I don't know. I'm looking forward to conference play. I'm looking forward to not having to dig to figure out like how good or how bad the opponent is and how much you can take away from this. I'm glad that conference play has finally arrived.
What other series do we have for conference play next weekend? Do we have some good ones?
Yeah, there are some good ones. I was looking at this earlier. Let me pull it back up. But there are certainly some good ones. Real quick, though, while I'm looking this up, I'm seeing a lot of banter about the jerseys, and they finally got the jerseys in. I just missed that whole Nike storyline where the Nike didn't have the jerseys. I think a listener explained it to me a couple weeks in, which whatever. But there's been some discussion about the off-whites. I kind of like them. I know not everybody's favorite. What do you think of them?
Not a big jersey guy, I'll be honest, but I like them. I like them. I'm not, you know, I'm probably not the person that's going to have a great opinion on uniforms. I always like make fun of my friends and like, y'all go talk about costumes somewhere else. But I, no, they're fine. I think they're fine.
I'm the same way. Like, I can appreciate a good uniform. Like, I can kind of know, like, oh, that's heinous. For example, the yellow pinstripes that Morehead State rolled out this weekend. And, like, that looks pretty good to me. But I can't really, like, market myself as a uniform connoisseur because I am partially colorblind. So I don't feel like that would jive. The uniform guru actually doesn't see colors too well. So I've never really branded myself as such. But I like them. I think they're decent. I don't really get worked up.
So we struggle with are stoplights tough on you? I'm not being jerk. Like,
No. Probably. I get that question all the time. Actually, no. It's more like colors that like blend. And like obviously, even if I was colorblind, like you got red up top, yellow in the middle, and green at the bottom, sure. So you can make it that way. But no, I really don't struggle with that. It's like a purple, navy black, like red and green next to each other, green and brown, that type of stuff. Really like color gradient, it throws me for a loop. Have you ever seen those?
Is there anything
that's okay, like go ahead, similar? Sorry. Have you ever seen those like charts that are like similar colors and it's like circles, but one about. Of the circles has like different colors to where it forms like a number?
Right.
Yeah, I don't see any of those.
So is there anything like this? Is there anything like in your daily life where being colorblind like actually screws you up? Like, is there anything that like genuinely like messes you up on a daily basis?
No, not really. Occasionally I'll have to ask my fiance, like with a shirt pant combo, like this is what I think it is. Like this looks okay. Right. It's not that bad. I'm not like labeling the colors of my clothes or anything. A lot of times at work, like, I help out. We have a woman who helps me with social media and she does graphics and stuff. And sometimes she'll ask my opinion on like, do you think this looks good? Like color wise. And I'm like, what's the difference? What am I looking at here? But other than that, no, nothing crazy. Because again, it's not like I'm like seeing the world through shades of gray. Like it's not that bad.
Right.
But I mean, it can get annoying sometimes. But no, nothing where daily I'm like, I need some assistance here, please.
Okay. I was just curious. I guess I'm lucky in that. I just can't see. I'm not colorblind. I just have
I'm both. I have bad vision in general too. So I'm in that
train. So. Have you moved to glasses or are we still doing contacts?
Still doing contacts. Have considered the move to glasses. Have considered LASIK. But like contacts
LASIK is where we're headed. Yeah, that's where I'm headed.
I think that's where I'm headed as well. And like contacts don't really bother me. So I'm a bit on the contact train. All right, I got the series up for next week. And I think there's several good ones. You get Florida hosting A&M.
I like that.
How about Alabama hosting Tennessee?
I like that.
Vandy Auburn.
Roll Tide.
In Nashville.
Ooh. Vandy will win that, I figure, but that's not bad.
LSU State in Starkville.
That's probably LSU winning two, I would think.
Maybe Arkansas three. Hosting
I'm not sold on State. Yeah, gross.
And then South Carolina Ole Miss, which is certainly interesting. Hell, I mean, we'll do our half-ass picks here. I'm going to go LSU two.
Yeah,
A&M Florida. I think I may go A&M two. I've been impressed. From the little I've seen.
Yeah, Slots is really good. I don't want to root for Kevin O'Sullivan, so sure.
Kentucky, Georgia. Not sure I totally trust Georgia as a club yet, but I'm definitely picking them to take two in Lexington.
Yeah, I'm too. I like Wes Johnson. Yeah.
Have you seen what this Charlie Condon kid is doing?
Yeah, he's like hitting bombs every other at bat.
Yeah, I think I saw a note this morning. I was looking at the SEC release. He's hitting like a cool 562.
Is that good?
He's not getting out a lot, if that's what you're asking me. He's not getting out a lot.
Seems good. That seems good.
I think that kid might be all right. How about Tennessee, Alabama?
We'll find out if Alabama's for real or not pretty quick.
I think I'm going to go Tennessee too, but yeah, not great.
Yeah. Is that in Tuscaloosa?
It is in Tuscaloosa.
I'm going to go Alabama too. Why not?
How about Ole Miss, South Carolina?
Ole Miss too. I'm gonna hope against hope, I think.
I think I'm going Ole Miss too as well, just because it is in Oxford. Yeah. And I think the offense will actually be able to get after South Carolina starting pitching a little bit. Missouri, Arkansas, Arkansas 3.
Arkansas 3.
Vandy hosting Auburn.
Vandy 2.
Vandy's had a couple stinkers, though, but playing better of lately. They had that crazy-ass game last weekend where they came back to beat.
Yeah, they always do this in non-conference play, and then they roll in a conference play and kick your face in.
Yeah, they lose a game like Dayton and Gonzaga, lose that middle FAU game. They, you know, kind of had to scrape out a game against Eastern Michigan, and then they end up fine. So I think I'm with you there. They got a midweek against Indiana, though, before they head into conference play. That'll be
– What is Ole Miss doing midweek? Because they always travel during spring break. Are they still doing that?
I would assume with the way the schedule has worked out, no. I had this wrong last week. I think I made an error on the podcast, which should not be the first or the last. I think I said last week they played ULM in Monroe. I actually think I said last week they played ULM in Oxford, and I was looking at the wrong thing. I was looking a week ahead. They, of course, played Memphis. They play ULM actually in Monroe, so they do travel, and then they'll come back
home. Do you know what happened? Trivia time. Do you know what happened the last time Ole Miss played in Monroe, Louisiana? Played baseball.
This wasn't the jersey thing, right? They were at Sea Law for
no, me. No, that was Sea Law 2 years ago.
Do you remember the year? Can I guess the year?
Yeah, you can guess the year, and I'll tell you if you're right or not.
Was it 20?
Yeah.
And that might have been the last baseball game
there. That's the year the world ended. Ole Miss played the game in Monroe, Louisiana. And coming back on the bus, they're about to play LSU. I'm pretty sure they got told their season was over.
They got told initially the season was suspended for at least 2 weeks to a month. I remember covering this on radio.
Okay.
I actually remember this. So I was going to, I was still working in radio at Super Talk. I had taken a couple of days off to go see MC in Dallas. She was living in Fort Worth at the time. And I thought about on the way over covering that game. And I was like, screw it. Like, what am I doing? No, let's just go straight over to Dallas. And coming back, I was coming back that Wednesday or maybe, yeah, that Wednesday, I guess the March the 13th. That's when the world starts shutting down. And then, of course, they get the baseball news the next day. And I think we had Mike Bianco on at some point in either the first or second day after that happened. And we were asking him, if I remember this correctly, like just really a bunch of questions he couldn't answer. Like, what do you do during these 2 weeks off? And you could kind of just tell in his voice. I knew no one didn't know anything, but for all intents and purposes, I think pretty much everyone knew at that point, they're not playing baseball again this year. This is wishful thinking to suspend it and reassess in 2 weeks.
Yeah. It feels like COVID was yesterday. It was 4 years ago, but it feels like it was yesterday.
There are parts of it to me that feel like there's yesterday, and then there's parts of it to me like that drive home as the world's shutting down. Because I was actually, I guess I can say this now, I was actually interviewing for jobs to try to move out to Dallas, and I'd gotten done with a couple of interviews, and I was like, this doesn't seem good for my chances. The whole world is shutting down. That part of it to me does not seem like yesterday. I guess I've had a lot of life change since then,
right.
But there are aspects like obviously the baseball aspect that we talked about and like showing up to radio and talking about Tiger King and The Last Dance every day. That seems like actually like it was not too long ago. So it goes in and out for me. I can tell you one thing. I never want to do that again. I know that's not exactly a hot take, but when everything shut down and we had to sit there, I mean, I'm like in some ways an eternal optimist. I know that might be surprising to some people, but I kept saying, and again, I didn't know anything about the science. This is not a COVID political take, but when it was all first happening, it was all first getting shut down. I was like, no, they could crank this back up by May. Like I was just sitting there and then having to see everyone be like, well, no, this is not happening really irritated me. And I just never want to go through that again. That's
well, you're a touch more extroverted than me, I think. So let me be clear. COVID was awful and I hated it and I hated what it did to people. But like the sitting in the house part, that didn't really bother me. I was pretty content. I played a lot of Fortnite and MLB The Show. But obviously I don't want to do COVID again. Let me be very clear. But
no, so I know what you mean. Like you could adapt for a while. You could adapt to just, okay, we're just all chilling at the house, working from home, a lot of video games. My complaint was just there's nothing on TV.
That's fair. That's like, no, fair. Cause all I watch them. Yeah. Cause all I watch are sports. No, that's fair. Cause I'm telling you, I got into a really bad habit of waking up at like 10:30 every morning and just playing The Show and playing Fortnite. And my girlfriend at the time, like 2 months into this, she was like, you've got to do something else.
Like,
But then
you
the
know,
rebuttal to
and
that is, what, you got any suggestions? What else is there to do?
about June, that's essentially what I said. I was like, what are we, you know, thank God as a teacher, we started school back in August that year, or I would have gone insane. Because I, as somebody that doesn't mind sitting at the house, about 4 months of sitting at the house had gotten the best of me. So yeah, it's I don't ever want to do that again. That was like, there were some days that I was thankful, like, hey, I don't have to, you know, I work from home, or I get to work from home or whatever. And then there are days like, I would like to see another adult. That would be fun.
I lived with two roommates at the time, and we were all pretty good friends. I knew the guys in college, and it's just funny. The first few weekends, like, all right, what are we doing this weekend? Oh, that's right, nothing again. We'll be doing absolutely nothing. Like, golf courses eventually opened back up, which helped us a little bit. But like, I remember one weekend we were literally just like throwing the frisbee in the backyard, and I think I swear to God, I think we did that for like 3 hours. Like, that was a ton of fun. It's like, well, really, was it actually a ton of fun? Like,
Bro, I remember getting one of my friends from high school. This is not a joke. I was 26 years old. And I was like, hey man, you just want to go throw a baseball? you just want to go outside and throw a ball. And he was like, no, yeah, that sounds awesome.
yeah,
So
we
we
just go
just
throw
threw a
the football out in
baseball.
the street, like, because what the hell?
Like we're 15 years old again.
God, that just, oh man, just the terrible, terrible
Yeah,
memories. I'm
never
not even the
what.
biggest, like, I'm probably a little bit more of an NBA guy than you, and I like it some. I don't watch it a ton, but I remember when they came back and they did the bubble, those first two NBA games they had
Remember,
in
I
the
was watching.
bubble. I was like, this is incredible. I miss this so much. And like, looking back now, there's probably never a world I'd watch that.
We're watching like the MLB start where there's nobody in the stands and the pitchers aren't very good because they haven't gotten to practice. And we're like, oh, thank God. Do you remember Japanese, or was it Korean baseball was so big because
Yeah,
that was the
on the
first thing
radio,
that
we
came
all
back?
picked KBO teams to root for.
Oh,
I think I had the Deuce and Bears. So I remember that. I remember distinctly actually late at night turning that stream on, and it was like, there's sports and people moving around again.
that guy's throwing it kind of hard. That looks good.
Yeah. I could get behind this whole KBO thing. I was
You
like, should I buy
remember
a package?
people were betting on like Madden simulation.
Oh my God, I had a couple roommates do that. Yeah, just like how do you know that this has to be rigged somehow? It's a Madden sim. Like, where are you finding odds on this type of stuff?
Buddy,
One
you can
last
find
thing.
odds on anything. Go,
Oh
I'm sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
no, that's true. No, I looked at my notes, and I was. But one last thing I forgot before I let you get out of here. I went to the Wednesday night against game against Memphis, and I got a pretty good vantage point of watching Riley Maddox throw. And he struggled the first inning. He left a couple fastballs up and really was not surprising anyone. But they had a couple hard hit balls. I think he allowed two runs, like three hits in that first inning. And after that, he kind of settled down and really didn't make nearly as many mistakes up. And all of a sudden, over the next four innings, he goes through four shutout innings with three hits, I think six strikeouts and a walk. Again, I don't want to tie this back into start over from the starting pitching conversation, but that guy has high velo stuff. The off-speed stuff really plays. And if he can keep it belt high and below, he was really impressive to me. And I feel like that got lost in the four-game week.
No, he was really good, and Ole Miss needs him to be good. You know, you mentioned the first inning, struggled a little bit, but the stuff's real. And sometimes, look, obviously, he came back from Tommy John last year, but you still have got to get those live game reps and get the adrenaline flowing. And nobody, no matter what anybody says, inter squad games and practices don't provide that. So, I think he'll wind up being a good arm for Ole Miss this year. He was his freshman year before he got hurt, and I think before the end of the year, we're going to look up and see Riley Maddox be a good arm for the Rebels.
And again, I just mentioned that too, because like we talked about like ceiling and rotation options. Would it stun you if he ends up as a guy that's effective enough then he factors into the weekend rotation somehow? Would that shock you?
No, that wouldn't shock me at all, especially on Sundays if you have to move Sanjay up in the order. No, that wouldn't shock me at all.
I agree with that as well. That was the last note I had. I just wanted to make sure I made mention
All
of
right.
that, because I did get, a couple good innings of just actually watching that up close in person. So he was very impressive to me.
All right, so off of baseball. Year one, Chris Beard, grade. What you going?
B.
B. I like that. I like that. Anybody that's saying it's a C or a D is just is it's recency bias. I also don't think they got, and this isn't necessarily a slight, it kind of is. Also think they probably could have
been a little bit better at the end. I know they were tired and beat up, but I think he, I mean, he all but admitted yesterday they did not play particularly hard or particularly well.
That actually factored a decent bit into my grade. I know I didn't spend like a ton of time thinking about it, but I'd actually thought about that yesterday. I didn't watch much of the game. Again, I was walking up and down New Orleans, killing time for a wedding. But in all honesty, I was like, all right, let's get to a place where I can go watch this. And then I put on the score app and it's 25-5. And I was like, never mind. Let's just go find some food. they had clearly.
Chris Beard was probably saying the same thing.
Yeah. And like, I knew very early on with this game, like their NCAA tournament hopes were obviously completely dashed. But I was curious, like, is this team, and I'd heard some rumblings about, like, even if they got an NIT bid, they weren't going to accept it. And I don't really know what that says about where the team's headspace was, or if it was simply just a decision that Beard made. Like, that was a little weird to me. Again, I don't know if that's 100% true or not, but I was.
Well, I'll tell you this. Did you watch his press conference yesterday?
Yes. He was not happy. He said he wanted to refund the fans. Which I actually
respect. But that wasn't the most interesting answer to me. The one where I asked about senior night and the guys going through senior nights and him saying basically, yeah, I'm not sure we want all those cats to be back if they even want to come back. That's essentially what he said.
Not shocking though, right?
And like, it felt real targeted at about two people.
I think I could probably tell you who the two people are. As well. And no, I think he's pissed. And again, going back to like why I picked the grade that I did, if this team had come out and like played really hard, and even though they didn't have a ton to play for, and like, you know, beaten A&M and then maybe won a game in the SEC tournament and really just kind of at least, I don't know, ran through the finish line or ran through the bag, whatever sports now you want to call it, I might have gone B+. It's like, look, this team's not that talented, but they played hard and they got the most out of them. I don't think you can genuinely say with this team, even though they weren't that talented, when you have two wins from February on and they're both Missouri, and then you put an effort like that out at home on senior day, I don't think you can say you got the most out of a team when that's the end to your season, even if they weren't favored in a lot of the games they were playing down the stretch. That said, that's not ragging on Chris Beard and what I think he's going to do with this program. Every first-year head coach has his hands tied from scheduling and roster construction standpoint. Yep. And this team flew too close to the sun too early. And what you pointed out about what he said in the press conference, I'm actually going to go back and look for that now. I think a pretty drastic overhaul is coming, because I think he's going to get some dudes that do play hard for all 30 whatever games, and dudes that do rebound, and dudes that, you know, don't have ridiculous defensive lapses. And so I think what we're talking about and them fading and it factoring in the grade and that comment probably go hand in hand.
Yeah, no. It was a good year. I thought this team could be like really, really bad, and they weren't. When I watched them play, I think it was Alabama State or Alabama A&M opening night, I'm like, oh, we suck. And we didn't suck. We played, for the most part, we played well and put a respectable product on the floor. I'll be interested to see what the tournament looks like. They could win on Thursday. I think they may. They're not going to beat Kentucky, I don't think, on Friday at 6 o'clock in Nashville, Tennessee, with 50,000 Kentucky fans there. I don't see that happening, but
I would say unlikely.
I don't know. We'll see. I thought it was a good first year, and I think, you know, I'm optimistic when I say this. I understand that, but I think this will be his worst team that he has at Ole Miss. I'd be shocked if it's not.
It would go totally against his track record if that statement were proven false. Like, if there's another team, however long he's here, that's as bad or worse, or this one, that's just, he hasn't had that in his track record. So count me in as excited. I'll renew my season tickets next year. Like,
yeah,
I'm excited about year two.
I will probably get them next year. I'll put it like that. So
it's a great value buy. We enjoyed the hell out of them this year. I was very happy with that purchase.
Okay. I want to get them, but how much are they? Do you have any idea?
Yes, I will. Yes, hold on.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll be renewing next year. You should buy them too. Ton of fun, great place to sit. He is Colin Brister. I appreciate the time, dude. We'll talk to you on Sunday. We will have conference games under our belt, so I'm looking forward to the conversation. We'll talk to you then, dude.
All right, my man. Sounds good.
Okay, that's going to do it for our show today. Thanks for listening to this podcast. As always, probably talk some hoops with Bracken at some point. Maybe a little March Madness preview and a couple other things down the pipe. So appreciate your listening to this podcast. As always, we'll talk to you here real soon.